This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council, Gay Men's Health Centre, on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Well. The show brought to you live every Tuesday from midday. I'm Adam and my co-hosts today are Texas and Jesse. Firstly, thanks to Adam for the news and thanks to Gazman for the morning show. How are we today, guys?
Absolutely excellent. Lovely to be with you, Adam. And Jesse.
I'm good. Just got back from a two-week holiday.
Yes.
I'm feeling very refreshed, but I'm glad to be back.
It's good for some, isn't it?
It sure is.
Here at Well, we talk about topics that relate to the GLBTI community. We're all about sex, health and well-being.
So what is on the show today, guys?
So today we've got a great show, but it's got a bit of a twist.
Oh.
Dun, 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 dun. Ooh. If I knew the hotkey for that, I would have played that sound effect, but I don't.
Thanks, Adam.
So today we have Dr. Christina Chang to talk about biomedical prevention. So treatment is prevention, PrEP, stuff that you've probably heard sort of said within the community by community members and maybe not be too clear about what it is, what it involves, because it's very intricate and stuff like that. So we're going to break it all down for you. But the other thing that we've got is a news segment lined up. So when we had the show on a Thursday night, the last time we were on, before we switched to the prime time daytime slot, which I'm loving, we actually used to do a news item. So we would find sort of some latest news and have a bit of a talk about it. I get a bit nostalgic talking about the news. Do you, Tex?
Look, I do as well. I remember when we used to do the news and it was fun because it brought topics that we could just talk about in a couple of minutes that gave people an idea of what we were on about, and then generally would give people a link as to where they could find out more about the story. Sometimes there's news research out there. People don't really understand what it means, especially me, how to interpret scientific data and results. That really blows my mind. So we like to make it really nice and easy for people, and people can send us in questions if they like.
Yeah, so if you've got any questions, whether it's about what we're discussing or even the news item or anything to contribute, let them know how people can get in touch with us, Tech.
There are a plethora of ways.
You love that word.
I do love that word because there are a plethora of ways. People can like us via facebook.com/joy. People can give the station a call, 1-300-JOY-949. Or if you want to get in contact with us right here, right now in the studio, there are two options. One of them's an email, onair@joy.org.au, or you could send us an SMS or you could send a text to Tex on 0427 JOY949. But we are also right there in the stratosphere of tweeting, so you can tweet us at WellJoy.
So we're just going to listen to a quick song now, a song which I love.
Really?
Men in Love.
Is that the name of the song?
It is indeed, and it's by The Gossip. Do you know who The Gossip are?
No, but I hear lots of it in the office.
This is Well on Joy 94.9, and today for the first time,
da-da-da-da.
If I knew where that sound bite was, I'd play that too. We have a new segment.
We haven't done this for so long.
I know. I'm actually looking forward to it. So one of the places that we go to as health educators at the Victorian AIDS Council is we actually like to look at a website called AIDS Map. It's an international website. It brings in, I guess, a range of or a plethora of research areas. So not just looking at gay men, but also looking at women, heterosexual couples, looking at a range of different bloodborne viruses and transmission, and also other things like malaria and TB and how the co-infection and stuff like that. So it's aidsmap.com.
That's right.
It is. I just Glad you've reassured that there, Tex. And so we look at it every now and then just to sort of see what the latest research is saying, whether there's anything interesting, whether we can incorporate that to our work. So the article that I found, which isn't as scientific, but it does have implications in terms of biomedical prevention, what we're talking about today, like that linkage.
That's very good linkage.
Yeah, good linkage. It is, gay men are better at predicting when they won't have sex than when they will. Shock horror.
Indeed.
Indeed.
So basically it was a study where 92 gay men and other men who have sex with men from New York, aged over 18, were asked to keep online sexual diaries every day for 30 days.
Well, it was actually a thing to mention was that this sample group was a very mixed group of MSM, and it was of all ages. You know, quarter under 22, quarter over 45, some were white, black, Latino, and some were even bisexual, weren't they?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess always when we look at the US research, we look at how applicable it is in terms of, like, an Australian context. But the main thing was the study in which a group of HIV-negative gay and bisexual men, because they were HIV-negative, were asked to predict each day whether they would have sex the following day and then compared their prediction to what actually happened, found that men generally overestimated the likelihood that they would have sex. How many times I've heard my friends say, yeah, I'm getting sex tonight, and then the next day it's like, nah, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It's been part of the study.
So if men reported that there was only a 0 to 5% chance of sex the following day, then sure enough, only about 4% actually ended up having sex. And there was no case in which someone had sex after having predicted that there was zero chance. So if you said, I've got zero chance of having sex tomorrow, no one in the study actually had sex the next day.
Yep.
Whether that was a self-fulfilling prophecy or not, I'm not too sure. But, you know. So the sexual optimists, I love it on the other hand, they were actually really disappointed because only 45% of men who predicted a 90% chance of sex the following day, so you've got to be pretty confident to say you've got a 90% chance of having sex the next day, actually ended up having it. Only 45%. You'd be so disappointed.
Absolutely. And this is also saying that it was anal intercourse. When it defines sex, it meant anal intercourse with a casual partner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess in terms of actually looking at, I mean, only one in six had a current steady relationship. So I guess that's a good way to sort of look at the people who were involved in the study, sort of, you know, to sort of gauge casual sex. But 59% reported that they had sex on 3 or more days per week. Busy, busy people.
Mm. Indeed, they are very busy people. I'm quite surprised at that.
Are you?
Well, I am. I mean, I know, for example, there's been research done. It was done by the Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society here in Melbourne, where they looked at research of men who go to sex on premises venues, for example, and found that 40% of the men who go on any given night, whether it's a really quiet night or a weekend busy night, go there with the intention not of having sex, but of using it more as a sexual, as a social club where they might meet up with their mates. So 60% of the guys went with the intention of having sex and probably did.
Yep.
But 40% went with the idea that it was more of a social club atmosphere. And if sex came along and, you know, reared its ugly head, then sure, they'd dive in. But generally, around 40% of the guys on any given night aren't actually having sex and are not going there for that reason.
Yeah, okay. And I guess that, I mean, that's really interesting to consider because sex on premises venues are social environments as well as sexual environments. So it's the context and obviously the intention behind why you're there. And as you said, if sex pops up, then so be it. But if that's not the intention of going. So I guess the interesting part that we have about this study is we're looking at treatment as prevention, and we're also looking at a thing called PrEP that we're going to discuss soon. And this has real world implications for the way you would use PrEP, which is basically HIV medication, but we won't get into the in-depths in that. We'll let the professionals actually spell all that out. But we're going to listen to a quick song by Justin Timberlake.
Oh, wow. I know who this is.
Oh, yay. Oh, yeah. It's called Take Back the Night. I actually don't know this song, but I love JT. So anyway, this is Well.
Sure to be fab.
This is Well on Joy 94.9.
You're tuned in to Well on Joy 94.9.
And we're chatting with Dr. Christina Chang from the Alfred Hospital and also from the Doherty Institute. So during our recent hypothetical forum, I remember you were involved in that. I mean, how was it?
It was lots of fun, actually. I was a last-minute stand-in, but it was lots of fun to be sitting around with some comedians who, like Judith Lucy, who I watched in a late show 20 years ago, and I still have the VCR. And yeah, so, and you know, amazing opportunity.
Oh, fantastic. And I remember you spoke about the treatment aspects of HIV in relation to prevention, or what some people have termed treatment as prevention. And obviously this term gets bandied around quite a fair bit, and it maybe means something different to clinicians, to lay people, to health educators. So can you provide us with an overview of what treatment as prevention is?
Yeah, I think you're correct. I think it's a little bit misunderstood sometimes, and I think people do have different ideas of what it is. I think basically, it is a concept where we talk about the personal and public health benefits of using antiretroviral therapy, i.e. HIV medicines, to try and suppress patients' detectable virus so that you can reduce transmission to other individuals. So I think that's sort of the broad umbrella. It's a new catchphrase that really came out after a recent a study from a few years ago called a HPTN study, to try and where they looked at, if you treat the in serodiscordant couples, so i.e. one person being positive and one person being HIV negative, if you treated them early, the HIV positive individual, treating them early versus treating them a little bit later based on a CD4 count that's lower, we find that if you treat them early, the person who is negative has less chances of becoming positive. So, and that sort of makes intuitive sense, right? So if you treat the person who's positive early, the person who's negative doesn't get HIV. So that's really good news. So that's sort of treatment as prevention. But really, if you think about it, we've had treatment as prevention for a long time. So, you know, maternal to child transmission, for instance, we treat the mother to prevent the child from getting transmitted. Mm. So, you know, or and say a doctor who gets a needle stick injury, you know, we give them HIV therapy to try and prevent them from getting HIV. Same sort of concept, I think.
So basically, it's giving a HIV positive person treatment earlier to reduce the amount of HIV virus in the blood so that there's a less of transmission risk to the HIV negative person.
That's right. And I think that's going to come up to the myths of HIV transmission as prevention. So some people like to think that, oh, doctors are now going around to treat people just so that we can treat others around them so that we don't transmit HIV, as if we don't really care about the individual, we're only caring about the community. And I think that's really not what we're trying to do at all. Because clearly HIV medicine is good for the HIV-infected individual.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. Yeah, it's better for your health. You get less complications. You live better lives. You live better quality of life, etc. Okay. So please don't let other people tell you that we're only treating HIV-infected patients so that we can reduce community viral load, which is very dangerous, I think.
Yeah, so there is benefit to the individual who's HIV-positive. It's not for the broader health.
That's right. It's not like as though we're trying to eradicate HIV from the whole world and therefore are just using people as a tool.
Yeah.
Sure. Can you talk about any other myths that you might have heard of or come across when people are talking about treatment as prevention?
Yeah. I think that myth that I spoke about was probably the first and major myth for me.
Yeah.
The other things are the idea that, you know, treatment and prevention is a dichotomy. You know, there's only treatment methods and there's only prevention tools. Clearly, a lot of these are a spectrum, right? So when you treat somebody, you're preventing somebody else from getting an infection. It's a spectrum, okay? The second thing I think is the idea that, you know, now we're only going to concentrate on treating patients or treating patients who are negative. You know, we're only going to use one tool. There are clearly many tools to prevention, right? So there's still condoms, there's still going to be abstinence, there's still going to be, you know, circumcision. A whole variety of things should be used as an armamentarium to try and prevent HIV, not just HIV medicines.
And I guess, I mean, you mentioned some of the positive aspects of treatment as prevention, but can you talk about the concept about, you were talking about a community viral load, like it's so, it's benefits for the community, because you did mention that there were several benefits, obviously, to the individual by taking treatment earlier.
Yep.
But what are some of the positive aspects of treatment as prevention in a broader concept?
Yep. So I think, again, this is probably intuitive to most people. If you have less HIV going around in the world, then you're going to have less chance of meeting someone with HIV or meeting someone with HIV that is still transmissible out of it because they have a high viral load. And so, therefore, you have a less chance of getting HIV. So it sort of sounds, you know, most primary students will be able to
fairly
understand
obvious.
That. Yeah, yeah. It's fairly obvious.
Sure. Yeah. You said earlier that you know, treatment as prevention has been around for a while. So with needle stick injuries or mother-to-child transmission, why do you think now it is starting to emerge as a much more visible issue?
I think the HPTN study did get a lot of publicity for good reason, because it does really show that, you know, if you're infected, if you treat it, if you get HIV treatment, it's not only good for yourself, but if you have committed relationships and you want to prevent transmission to your partner for 30 years, etc., that's the best way to do it.
Sure.
So I think it is great to have that publicity, but as long as we don't skew our conversations.
Yeah.
Because I think there was a 96% reduction in relation to HIV transmission through the HPN052 study, I think.
Yeah, so it's a 96% reduction. So this was a big study, about 1,700 serodiscordant couples, so i.e. one positive, one negative, in a whole variety of countries. And so, but and again, of course, it depends on the person who's taking medications to take medications.
Yeah.
So, because as you all know, adherence is really important. Yeah.
And so, I guess the undeniable question. So, as we asked in the hypothetical, and you were very easily able to skirt around not answering the question, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. Is undetectable, so having basically a HIV virus that you cannot detect by the tests that we've got now, is that the new negative?
It's a bit like is green the new black, or is, you know, etc. But I'm still finding that hard to answer. I think, firstly, I should applaud everybody who is undetectable. I think it's a great effort to take medications every day. It's a big imposition, yeah, and it's a big commitment. So if you're undetectable, I think everybody should get a big pat on the back, okay? That's it. Clearly, the definition of undetectable is based on a test. So the test that we use at the moment uses a particular test that detects down to less than 20 copies. Anything less than 20 copies of virus, free virus in your body, we can't really detect. And so we say it's undetectable. And we clearly applaud our patients for it, which is great. Okay, that said, if we find other tests, and there are other tests that we use in research studies, then we can find much lower levels of lower limit of detection. And so therefore, most patients will be able to find one virus or two copies or three copies or five copies. And therefore, they're not completely equivalent.
Yeah.
Okay. Second thing I tried to speak about was the idea of rebound virus. Okay. So if you have a detectable virus test result that you took from today, for instance, okay, that reflects what's happened in the past. It doesn't reflect what's going to happen in the future necessarily. Okay,
sure.
So if you take some drugs, or if you go on a holiday and you forget your medications, then clearly your virus is going to come back, and that will come back in a few days. So therefore, again, it's not a license for the future. It's something, a reflection of the past. The other thing is the idea of compartmentalization. Okay, so patients, what we measure in the blood may not be necessarily the same as what we measure in your semen or in your vagina, in various other bodily fluids, or in your brain, etc. So, so they're not equivalent things.
So basically, no, it's not the new negative, but it's actually something that's added to the prevention toolkit that we can use.
Yeah, I think you know, if you're undetectable, we should be very, very, very happy. Yeah, but we shouldn't make, you know, it's not exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. But this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we're just going to listen to a...
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy.
Indeed, this is Well, Well, Well. You're listening to Adam, Jesse and Tex, myself, and we're in the studio talking with Dr. Christina Chang. Now, Christina, another aspect of biomedical prevention is PrEP. Now, can you tell us what PrEP is, what it stands for?
Yep. So, again, in medicine, there are lots of acronyms here.
Oh,
so,
yes.
There's PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis with relation to HIV. This is distinct from post-exposure prophylaxis. Yeah. So, I think just for your listeners, next time when you want a PrEP, probably don't use the acronym, use the whole term. So, PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. So, if you think you're high risk for acquiring HIV, there is a concept that if you take HIV medications, you can prevent yourself from getting HIV. That's bottom line.
Okay, so what does the research tell us about PrEP, you know, and what level of prevention it provides for HIV-negative people?
Sure. So the research tells us that if you're MSM, there are a few major studies in this. One of them is called IPREX.
Mm-hmm.
So the IPREX study was performed in men who have sex with men. And basically with this, if you take a particular type of HIV medication called, in this case, called Truvada, which is actually two types of HIV medicine, then you would actually reduce your HIV acquisition by 44%. Okay. If you take the HIV tablets very regularly, so they stratify by how often these participants actually took the medications. So if you're very adherent to the medications, you can actually increase this reduction to 77%. So that's clearly reminds us that it's not just about taking medication, but taking medication properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then there are two other studies that look at heterosexual couples, and again, they show similar results using tenofovir or Truvada. Again, the percentage is about 60-odd to 70-odd percent. There are a few studies, though, I have to say, that more recently that have shown that these haven't come through. So, in fact, patients who've taken Truvada haven't actually been protected against HIV acquisition. But this is largely because they haven't been adhering to medications.
Right.
So there's mixed data.
So what are some of the potential pitfalls to using PrEP? Obviously, you've mentioned that if people don't take it properly, then obviously their likelihood of acquiring HIV sort of increases and whatnot. But what are some of the other pitfalls of people using PrEP or...
Yep. I think the other thing is that on the ground, apparently some people are acquiring medications through the internet, etc., even in Australia. Yep. And I think one of the other pitfalls is that in some of these studies, up to about 10% of the patients who think that they're high risk and therefore think that they want to be on PrEP, in fact, are diagnosed with HIV. So there is going to be a number of people out there who actually may have HIV who are taking what they think is PrEP, but it's in fact a suboptimal combination for treating HIV. So that obviously will, you know, may lead to future resistance to medications, etc. Because remembering that these medications that we talk about for PrEP are up to recently have been a very important backbone to the regimen of HIV combination therapy that we give you if you do have HIV. So resistance to these key drugs will be a major issue.
So that means that if you were to become HIV positive and go on treatment, that your treatment regimen would actually probably be a little bit more complicated, because the one that you probably use the most is, well, you're resistant and it's not working.
That's right. I think that's really only true if you've been taking it poorly. Okay, if you take it all the time, yeah, then the resistance rate is actually not that high.
Now, look, I've heard, and it's been put forward, if you like, that if people start using PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, then they'll stop using condoms altogether. Is there any research out there to suggest that this is right? This is what?
In fact, not. So in these major studies that we spoke about, particularly the IPREX study, we show, in fact, that the condom use actually increased. Yeah, and in fact, people had less anal sex. Now, you have to remember that these were randomized control studies, and therefore patients didn't really know whether or not they were getting the tablet that was going to work or the tablet that was a placebo. Okay, and therefore, and also in a randomized control studies, you have trial doctors or trial nurses reminding you all the time, every month, that you need to watch for sexually transmitted illnesses. You need to think about condoms. You need to reduce risk behaviors. So, in a randomized control study, the condom use actually decreased. In the real world, we don't really know what it would be.
And so, is PrEP available in Australia? You said that people are ordering it off the internet and whatnot, but can you get it from your doctor? And so, is it available in Australia? And if not, what? Why not?
So, sadly, not yet. So, in Australia, the government hasn't quite allowed PrEP for everyone. Instead, we have what we call demonstration projects, one in Victoria, one in New South Wales, and one in Queensland. And the idea is that we want to understand in the real world how easy would it be to implement PrEP, what are the pitfalls, etc. And so, yes, there's a Vic PrEP program that you can look up on the internet, run by Professor Edwina Wright, and a base at a number of clinics around Melbourne.
Fantastic. Well, Christina, thanks very much for coming on today. I think we could have gone basically a whole three or four shows about treatment,
yes,
prevention and PrEP, because there is so much. And it's. But if you were going to provide someone with, I guess, a place to go to find out more information if they wanted to get more clarity, is there anywhere specific, like is there a PrEP website, or is there stuff on the Alfred website or something that they could go to?
Yeah, so there is a Vic PrEP website that actually looks really nice, and it gives you a whole link, a number of links to some very informative things. And of course the VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council one, also has really good information.
I was hoping you would say that. Yeah. I wasn't going to put it out there though.
And also NAPWHA actually, and NFAO. So all of these websites, if you could just do a simple Google search, you'll be able to find lots of information on, you know, science and myths, etc.
Fantastic. Well, Christina, thank you very much for coming in. It's been an absolute delight to chat to you. And
you.
All good luck with at the Alfred and at the Dowie Institute. I'm sure we'll see you at the next hypothetical.
Indeed.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
No worries.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. We're coming up to almost near the end of our show with Jesse, Adam and myself, Tex. We've had a couple of messages. In fact, we've had two.
One of them
was right at the start of the show, so I think it might have been coming in on the Gazman show, but we get it. It's a new membership, and it's Lance from Frankston. Welcome to the Joy family. And Lance has also given a very, very generous donation to the station to help keep us on air, so thank you very much, Lance.
Thank you, Lance.
Indeed. A little bit of applause. We also had a message in at the end of our last segment when Christina was here. Saying thanks, well, and Christina, very informative show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is, because obviously it's a topic that gets talked about in the community quite a fair bit, and there's obviously, I think, some misunderstandings and misconceptions that Christina was able to clear up. But
that's good clarity.
As she said, go to the other websites and have a look, like a FAO or the VAC website or the NAPA website, and just get some more information around it. But Tex, we've got something interesting coming up.
Indeed, this week, 2 days away, on Thursday.
Do tell.
Thursday night, we have one of our community forums, a VAC community forum, and it's titled Future Tools for Prevention.
Oh, wow. Did that kind of like fit in with like, the topic that we were talking about today?
How convenient.
As you mentioned, as we were talking to Christina, you mentioned Associate Professor Edwina Wright.
Yes.
Well, she's one of the people speaking.
Ah, she's lovely.
Indeed. Along with our CEO, Simon Ruth.
He's lovely as well.
He's very lovely as well. So it'll be those two talking, talking about the Vic Prep demonstration study, which of course Christina was just talking about as well.
And I understand,
discussing the future of HIV prevention.
And I did hear, and I'm not sure if this is correct, but there's going to be someone who is a participant in the PrEP demonstration project. So they're going to be talking about their experience.
Yeah.
That will be really interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Someone on the ground, someone actually who is taking the medication, who is able to say, well, yep, this is what it's all about.
And so where is it? When is it? How much does it cost?
It's free, of course, because it's a VAC community forum. It's at Hares and Hyenas in Johnson Street, just around the corner from Brunswick Street, 63 Johnson Street, Fitzroy. And if you want to find out more and reserve a spot on the night, you can go to forums@vac.org.au or just go to the Victorian AIDS Council website and look for the toolbox.
Fantastic. Well, we'd like to thank Christina very much for coming on today, and obviously to Lance who donated, and also to
our new membership
Lance, who was the new member and he donated as well. Thank you, Lance. That's great.
Well, this has been well for another week. Can you believe that we've actually flown through it so quickly?
I can't believe it. No.
Well, coming up next is the Afternoon Drive Show
with Fabulous Fiona.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.